Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. I'm joined once again by one of our all-time favorite guests, the one and only Ben Fennell. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben_NFL. Of course, this is his unbelievably amazing time of year where he does all the work all year round covering all these prospects. Of course, he's covering the draft for NFL Network this year. Once again, per usual, Ben, it is great to have you back and welcome back to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. It's been a while. I think we need to catch up just a little bit, but it's certainly a fun time. You know, this is my calendar kind of apex of all the work we've done, for the previous 11 months, and it could be a little bit of a hair pulling time as well as we're getting so close to Christmas Day. Everybody just wants to know what's under the tree and a little bit of over analysis and some smoke screens, but tis the season. It's a fun time if you allow it to be fun. Remember, this draft time is a fun time to study new players being injected to the league, and it's tough to predict as everybody just wants to know what's going to happen. We'll know in six short days here, Thursday night, things will get rolling. And it's crazy. We're six nights away as we're sitting here on Friday.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's going to be here before you know it. And like you said, all of a sudden, then we'll be breaking down all the players that did get selected and going through them. And then before you know it, rookie mini camps, OTAs, little time off. And then before you know it, training camp will kick off and we'll be right back in the swing of things. Should be a ton of fun. Obviously, my favorite thing, by the way, is like, I know like around this time, people start getting a little antsy. My favorite time, every time you're like, I'm trying to cram as many of these in before I can get to, and like, you're already looking ahead to 2025 draft around this time the next year's draft. So I always love seeing you post things around this time. And I'm just like, man, I wish I was that prepared already for 2024, that 2025, but you do your work all year long and it's so fun to follow you. And I've got tweets bookmarked of like all year long of like, oh yeah, that's right. Ben had this back in, I'm looking at a guy now that Ben was tweeting back like a year ago at this time. So it's always fun to go through the process.
Well, I got to say, some of my 2025 tweets don't get quite the engagement of the current class. So I'm glad someone's reading them, someone's bookmarking them. But the draft, Andy, is so much fun because of like the tiers of the calendar.
Yep.
Like obviously area scouts were way out in front of this class. They were doing stuff in the spring and the summer. Some of the film guys get involved in the fall. Everybody in the draft community jumps in January, obviously with the all-stars and the post-game or the postseason stuff.
Yep.
But then like the national media kind of comes in right around combine March. And it's just fun to see some high level, high profile NFL analysts seemingly just discovering guys like this week. Yeah. That are going to be first round picks and talking about it like they just, blew the dust off a book and want to share what they just found with, everyone. And I'm like looking around like we've been talking about this guy for 10 months.
Yeah.
But that's just how big the NFL fan pool is. There's millions and millions of people that love this game. Not everyone follows it in the same calendar that you do. And I promise you, Andy, there's going to be people that put on draft coverage on Thursday. And that's the first step that they've taken towards the draft.
Yep.
And we always get reminded of that NFL Network. You may be deep in the draft. Not everybody watching is. So assume that you're teaching and kind of, unveiling these guys for the first time on the broadcast. But it's just a strange exercise for someone that's been doing it for the previous 11 months. But it's just the scope that there's so many different levels of fandom and not everyone follows it in the same calendar and the depth that you do. And that's okay. And it's our job to educate the people when they want to jump in. And whether it's this week or next week, or you want to start learning about next class this week, there's a place for everybody. And I think that's the fun part of how popular this game is.
Well, that being said, let's educate some people. But first of all, I know you said this is your 10th draft cycle doing this, and this is one of the times that you are most excited for the draft. I'm with you. I think the anticipation of what happens after pick one and just what happens in the first round is going to be super intriguing in this one. I also think from a Packers standpoint, what happens at pick 25, they've got five picks in the top 100. They have a variety of different directions that they could go in. I think this is an extremely unpredictable draft overall. I think this is a really hard draft to predict for the Packers as well. This does seem to be like an extra exciting NFL draft on a variety of levels.
Well, I like the unpredictability, obviously, just for coverage. Yep. But there's a lot of high-level players at high-level positions that the NFL just desperately needs. And we obviously want to point right to quarterback, but this league has an offensive line epidemic as well. They need starting offensive linemen. They need developmental depth. They need guys that can come in and play right away. They need guys that they need to work on down the road. So I think there's some, you know, need-based, you know, talent in this draft that really checks boxes that teams need. And then obviously the exciting high-level receivers in college that are seemingly ready to play in the NFL, whether it's from the flag football 7-on-7 kind of culture of this era, that's just making these guys pass game demons and ready for, you know, NFL Sundays. But it just seems like what the NFL needs, this draft has, and just is so exciting, particularly on the offensive side, to see these guys just get injected to the NFL. And you know me, I'm not too emotional about where guys land. Yep. I'm just so excited to see them get to Sundays and be professionals and help improve teams on Sundays. So I don't want to see any of these teams with really good rosters and, oh, if only they had an offensive line. You know, those just pain me. So I think this draft is just right in all the right spots.
It is. And I'm excited too to see, you know, not necessarily caring of like, all right, does this player go to this spot, but what players have the perfect fits that they go to. And like you said, teams that are in desperate need of maybe that left tackle that get their left tackle. Like those are the things that sort of unlock everything for certain players and for certain teams. And that's always like the day or like the day after the draft is done, going back and seeing like, all right, what players fit in which spots that are just these perfect fits and which teams got players that fit perfect needs. Like those are always the fun things to look back on as soon as the draft is done, not necessarily the A, B, C, D, F grades right after, but those team fits and player fits that are so exciting. You mentioned some of the strengths of this draft, offensive line, quarterback, top end wide receiver, just wide receiver in general, really. Those are, I know, sir, are some of the strengths. Are there any sneaky strengths? Are there any weaknesses in this draft that you're seeing as well?
I really like the developmental and kind of ready depth at certain positions that may not necessarily mean first round, but like cornerback. I just think this is a really interesting corner group, whether guys are going to convert to safety, whether they're going to play nickel, whether they're a little small but good in man coverage, whether they're a little bit bigger like, you know, the TJ Tampas of the world. I just think there's all sorts of shapes, sizes, abilities, but nobody's perfect. So it's kind of like in the eye of the beholder and what you want out of that guy and the versatility and the scheme. The same thing with linebacker. We probably won't have any first-round linebackers. I really like this linebacker group. I think there's going to be guys that play on Sundays. And if you kind of take a landscape of NFL linebackers that had a start last year, it's a bloodbath out there. Yeah. And it's a physical position. Your availability is your ability. And there are guys that were thrust into the fire way before they were ready. And I just see guys that have been around college football for 4, 5, 6 years that look like grown men ready to play on Sunday and play linebacker and to be available and to be tough guys for teams. I don't know if that makes them top 50 picks. There's a lot of guys that are going to play on Sundays and play a considerable amount. Same thing with the running back group. It's a fun running back group, Andy. Yep. I don't know if anyone's going to get taken in the top 40, but I promise you, Jonathan Brooks is going to make plays on Sundays. Bucky Irving's going to make plays. Blake Corum's going to be a great piece for somebody on Sundays. There's a lot of guys to get excited about. There's only 32 picks in that round one, though. So I think some guys in some positionals, kind of get sneered at just a little bit because they won't be round one. A lot of these guys are going to play on Sundays, play early, and I think be impact players, just not at those positions that, you know, maybe jostled around between 10 and 25 in the first round.
Yeah, I think that second, third round tier for a lot of different positions are really interesting. You mentioned the running backs. I like some of the interior defensive linemen and the edge rushers around that range as well, where, again, the first guys might go pretty quick, but then I think there's some really intriguing depth after that that maybe doesn't get talked about quite as much. As we transition over to the Packers side of things and what Green Bay could potentially do in this draft, let me just ask you the very blatant question. Is there somebody at pick 25 that you think could be there for Green Bay that would be an ideal sort of pick for Green Bay?
Well, I'll hedge it with two, you know, one for each side of the ball. I think that's going to be Graham Barton country and Cooper DeJean country. Yep. And whether it's Barton, you see him as an interior or a tackle or a combination of the two, or DeJean safety, nickel, corner, or a combination of the three. They just seem like they have that high level ability with the versatile skill set in areas of needs for the Packers. I think that's just kind of a three-tiered checkbox. Now, I don't know if they're, you know, RAS and their athletic thresholds meet the Packers in that, but obviously, okay, you're giving me the nod of approval there. So, it just seems like those are the two that are going to be there as far as need, talent, depth, draft needs, things like that. So I think Graham Barton, Cooper DeJean seem like one and 1A.
Yeah, I think so too. The reason why both make so much sense too, and the one thing that Green Bay does tend to do is, like, you know, value premium positions a little bit more. So like outside corner and offensive tackle, well, both of them theoretically could play there. But the other thing that's really nice is, as you mentioned, they're both positions of need, but if with a Graham Barton, right, Green Bay has so many potential depth holes along the offensive line and where you'd love competition at a variety of different spots. Well, he might just, Graham Barton might just push Rashid Walker at left tackle. He might push Josh Myers at center. He might push Sean Ryan at right guard. And if you feel all of a sudden he comes in and he's the best right tackle, well, you can move Zach Tom if you needed to. If you feel like he's the best left guard, you could theoretically move Elgton Jenkins if you need to. So, like, I don't think either of those last two are probably options there, but still, it gives you a ton of ability to plug him where he fits best. And it now gives you three guys in Zach Tom, Graham Barton, and Elgton Jenkins that have unbelievable versatility along that offensive line to really try to get those best five guys out there. And the same thing with Cooper DeJean in a very similar way. If Jair is going to be your one and Carrington Valentine or Eric Stokes just don't come back and, you know, be the players that you're hoping they're going to be, well, then guess what? He could potentially be your starter opposite Jair. I know you give Keyshawn Nixon the new contract, but guess what? If all of a sudden DeJean is best in the slot and he's just better than Nixon, you have that option. And if he pairs best with Xavier McKinney as that second safety, he could theoretically do that too. So I think it answers a lot of needs. It gives competition to so many different players, and they're very much Packers types as well. And, you know, just good football players too.
Yeah, I think there's always two kind of philosophies to come back to that I see this time of year. Versatility is value.
Yeah.
It's not a enigma and raising questions because he can do a lot of things. So I think it's always to remember the more you can do, the more value you have. Just because it creates questions because he can do multiple things doesn't make it a negative. In the same breath, you don't need to plug them into a spot on day one, night one of the draft, maybe not even the first month, maybe not even the first 4 months. And I always reflect back to, like, Elgton Jenkins, who I'm pretty sure played all five spots in college. I am fully convinced this Packers team had zero plan for him when they drafted him. And that's okay. Yep. Why? He's an exciting, high-level talent that can do a lot of things for an offensive line room. And I think in those first 18 months, he played five different spots for the Packers. He thought he was going to be a starting guard, then center. I believe he started the opener against the Vikings at right tackle a few years ago. Yep. So, you know, don't feel like you need to peg him into a spot on night one. Get high-level players to the roster and improve in spots. So I think it's much more of a big picture roster building philosophy than trying to nail that bottle cap from 100 yards away and fill that need. Get better players, improve your roster.
Maybe it was later in the NFL, but I swear you had been the one that put together the picture of Elgton Jenkins lined up at left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, and right
tackle.
That's
typically my style.
Yeah, that is very much your. That's a Ben Fennell. I think he had one of those, but I could be, maybe I'm transposing two players. There's a few other names that have become, you know, sort of popular in Packers circles as picks around that pick 25 range. I'm going to give you three of those names and see if, what you think of those players, or if they could be fits for Green Bay, if they could be there at 25, or if that'd be reaching at 25. Tyler Guyton, the offensive tackle, Amarius Mims, the offensive tackle, and Kool-Aid McKinstry, the corner. Thoughts on those three players, and if you think they might be a fit for Green Bay?
Yeah, I think certainly all the tackles are going to be in the conversation. I just think it's too high level of a tackle class. I've said this in the past as well, and they've come out with zero tackles. So
yeah, always exactly.
Go in with that footnote asterisk as well that Ben Fennell doesn't know what he's talking about. So, but there's just so many tackles. I think this team needs tackles. They need maybe a starting left tackle to at least compete with Rashid Walker, some developmental depth. So Tyler Guyton, Amarius Mims, you know, Kingsley Suamatia, I think those guys are going to beat Jordan Morgan. I think they're all going to be in the conversation there for 25. Now, I have personal opinions on the readiness of certain guys. I don't think Tyler Guyton is ready to play in year one, and that's okay. Amarius Mims has 8 starts in college. He looks really good. He may not be ready to play either. It's kind of a guessing projection with him. He's a really exciting player because of his traits and size and length. And when he has been on the field, it certainly looks the part, just been in a small dose. So I think same thing with, you know, Suamatea. I think he looks the part. I think he is a mess with footwork, hands, feet, balance, between the ears. But he has everything you want. It looks like he was built in a lab. So there's a lot of things you could like out there. It's just a matter of the readiness. Do you need somebody day one? Can you have, you know, maybe a redshirt year with some of these players? And I think a lot of those tackles in that area of the Packers are going to have that kind of caveat to them. So that's why guys like maybe a Graham Barton, maybe a, you know, a Zach Frazier who can play guard center, maybe a more apropos player to plug in right away on day one. Now converting over to Kool-Aid, certainly that's that next tier corner, probably after Terrion and after, you know, Quinyon Mitchell. I think Kool-Aid's going to be in that same conversation with, you know, Mike Sandstrahl, the nickel out of Michigan, maybe even Tyler Newbin, the safety out of Minnesota, or Jaden Hicks out of Washington State. I think that next tier of defensive back is going to have a couple different guys in there. I think Kool-Aid's a really good player, and I think he's kind of taken a back seat to his teammate in Terrion Arnold. And yes, he did get carved up by Adonai Mitchell, you know, once or twice in that Texas game that left a bad taste in people's mouth. But a lot of his tape, when it looks good, looks a lot like Jeff Okuda's, you know, did, you know, who was a top five pick coming out of Ohio State that dealt with some injuries early with the Lions. But he's a really exciting player, can do some returning as well, which I think some people's brains are a little bit fluid with the new kickoff rules and things like that, and trying to find a high level returner. I think Kool-Aid is absolutely going to be in that conversation. But some of these players, Andy, the conversation just makes it more of a reflection of what they have. So I feel like you go get Kool-Aid in round one. Does that mean there's a little bit of a ding on Eric Stokes' projection to be a starter this year?
Yeah.
You know, if they go and get a, you know, a Michael Hall in round two, who's an exciting explosive three tech, is that an indictment on Devontae Wyatt,
yeah,
you know, who they took early in the first round 2 years ago? So I think some of these guys that you have are in the conversation, I just think come a little bit of a comparative analysis to what they have as well.
If that makes sense there.
It
very much does. And I think that's honestly one of the things that I've struggled with most this draft cycle is you start talking about the guys that they could take. And again, if you do take a Cooper DeJean or a Kool-Aid McKinstry, what does that mean for Carrington Ballantyne or again, Eric Stokes? All right, if you do take a left or a tackle for that matter, does that mean Rashid Walker is going to be out at left tackle and he's going to become the swing guy? Does that mean that Zach Tom's going to have to kick inside? Like, there are legitimate questions that all of a sudden happen if you take some of these guys. If you like somehow, if they do take a wide receiver, where do they find playing time? Because you've got Romeo Doubs, you've got Christian Watson, you've got Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Bo Melton looked good at the end of last year. You had Malik Heath, who couldn't even get active on the last day of the seasons last year. So I do think there's like questions of like, how does it impact everything else? Tight end's another one. You just took Musgrave and Kraft this past season. And now if you were to take a tight end early, like how do you get them playing time when you've already got two young developmental tight ends that are ready to play right now? So these are all very interesting questions in this draft. Many of you, like myself, are Wisconsin sports fans. While it's not Packer season anymore, there's still some really exciting action coming up in the world of Wisconsin sports. The Bucks are getting ready to kick off their postseason run, which is hopefully a lot more fun than their regular season run. And while the Brewers, meanwhile, are off to a hot start, hopefully they can continue that to start their 2024 campaign. But whether you're a Bucks fan, a Brewers fan, or a fan of any other hockey, baseball, or basketball team right now, there's never been a better time to start playing Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app where you can turn your knowledge into serious cash. Right now, you can win 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and MLB entries today. Prize Picks is super simple to play, and I'm able to log in, make my picks, and submit my entry in under 60 seconds. Add in the ease of Apple Pay for quick deposits, easy withdrawals, tons of player selections, and injury insurance, and you can easily see why Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going LeBron James and Steph Curry in their play-in tournaments. I can't wait to see what they do to try to keep their playoff hopes alive. Whatever picks you make, and regardless of who you select, the best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Yeah, and I think constantly, you know, improving your roster in an unemotional state is part of winning in this league making those tough decisions and maybe not taking that Ted Thompson philosophy of wanting to protect all your chicks, you know, because they were yours. You brought them into the hen house and you don't want to let them go. You got to make some tough choices. And if you see a better chick outside that hen house, you're going to make that swap and it's a business out here. And I think a lot of these guys know that going in. And I think it's a little bit more of the fans and their emotionality to players. And, you know, you develop a human connection to people. And a lot of these guys are great people. And you should root for their success, whether they're Packers or not even playing football. And I think always kind of coming back to that human element and wanting success for them as individuals, not just for your team, is an important part of fandom.
Yeah, operation, draft good football players, and then figure out the rest later. Because Goody said it, and it's a Ted Thompsonism, is you don't know what your needs are going to be 6 months from now. And it's easy for us to look at it right now and be like, well, look at safety and this and that. And like, all of a sudden, Anthony Johnson Jr. takes a major, you know, leap in year two, and safety doesn't look so bad. And all of a sudden, you've got a couple guys that get hurt at another position that looks really strong right now. And all of a sudden, that's a huge need. So draft good football players, figure out the rest later, and those things will sort of sort themselves out over time.
That's a tricky thing too, Andy, is like projecting the growth of the players on your team too. Not everyone develops on the same curve, as we know. So those guys that are just ready to take that huge leap from year one to year two, do they know it or do they not know it, kind of thing? So I always love learning the fact that players can change. They can get better. They can get worse too. Yeah, so where is that projection? Are you ready for that projection? And are you preparing your roster for those changes? I think is always a fun part of, you know, evaluating your own team.
And I think it's such a great point. I go back to like Carrington Valentine, who had a nice rookie season for a seventh round pick. And I think a lot of people just want to make that easy and obvious assumption that, oh my goodness, he's a rookie seventh round guy in his first year. And he looked like a semi-capable starter. Like, imagine what he's going to be in year two when he takes that next step. And it's like, yeah, that all sounds great. But guess what? Eric Stokes didn't take that second year jump. Demaryius Randall never took that second year jump, nor did Josh Jackson, nor did Quentin Rollins. Like, that's just that corner, not to mention a bunch of other players that have been on this team that haven't. Josh Jones, the safety, never took that second year jump. So yeah, it's great that they showed some signs and flashes in year one. That is not a guarantee. And I thought Eric Stokes actually took a major step back in year two before even the injuries started to hit. So it's not a guarantee that these guys are going to be at the same level they were the previous year, good, bad, or ugly. We'll see, but those are really difficult things to project going into the next season.
Man, you ruffled off those corner names really quick, Andy.
Yeah, sorry. And those, yeah, just because those are, I think we have a little cornerback PTSD when it comes to drafting in Green Bay.
Sounded like a jilted lover, and you just ran through all the ex-girlfriends real quick.
Yeah, it's been Ladarius Gunter. There's been too many.
Gunter. Oof.
I know. All right, let's talk about some day two names that I know a lot of people have talked about. You mentioned Suamataea. Jaden Hicks is another one you sort of touched base on there. Jordan Morgan's another one. Edgerrin Cooper, Marshawn Kneeland. Those are sort of guys that are being bandied about a little bit as potential day two picks as Green Bay. Feel free to go off with any of those or any other ones that you think could maybe make sense in day two.
Yeah, I think Junior Colson, linebacker out of Michigan, will probably be in that ballpark too. That CEO, athletic linebacker. He just looks like he's ready made to play for Sundays. I really like his teammate, Mike Sandstrell at nickel, that feisty, you know, kind of Mike Hilton profile. Don't forget, he was a four-star receiver initially at Michigan. Yeah. He's got tremendous ball skills, really exciting athlete. Some of these interior offensive linemen, though, Andy, I have a soft spot for. I love Christian Haynes out of UConn. Okay. That guy's vice grip hands, really athletic. He's already pissing off D linemen like he did at the Senior Bowl. That LSU kid is the one that threw his helmet, you know, on a one-on-one rep. Dominic Pooney out of Kansas, who was a tackle initially. Looks like he's going to be a guard center. He just looks ready-made to be a green and gold offensive lineman there with his versatility and the Midwest profile there. And I think some of these exciting, you know, maybe one-dimensional interior defensive linemen are exciting, whether it's Chris Jenkins or Michael Hall. These are guys that I don't think are particularly strong run defenders, but everybody's looking for disruption in getting after the passer from the interior alignment. Both these guys are really exciting. I think Michael Hall's stock is really kind of rising over the past few weeks or so as people are diving into his tape and kind of rounding out his evaluation. Really interesting player in that he didn't play a lot at Ohio State, not a lot of production when he was on the field. But he has some really exciting traits. Everybody's looking for that explosive three tech. And Chris Jenkins, same type of thing, high level player at Michigan. It's a little undersized, a little narrow, you know, in the lower half. Not a great run defender, but a guy that can maybe play off the edge early, then slide into three tech. He reminds me a lot of Justin Madubuike, you know, coming out of Texas A&M, who just cashed in this past offseason after a huge season with the Ravens there. So a couple guys in the trenches there on day two. Be a lot of safety options, as you had mentioned. You know, the Jaden Hicks of the world, Malik Mustafa out of Wake is a really fun player. And I think those are all areas the Packers need. You know, versatile linemen, linebackers, safeties. I think round two is going to be a great spot for them.
I'm sorry, did you say Jenkins reminds you of Madubuike?
Yes, Chris Jenkins.
Right. It's funny because I had Michael Hall as a Madubuike comp as well. Michael Hall is one of my favorite players in this draft. Puni as well. It's interesting with Puni because a lot of times that I think he's going to be 24 or is 24 already, one of the two. And sometimes that can be obviously looked at a negative in the draft cycle. But somebody for Green Bay, we're talking about like that round three sort of range that could maybe play some tackle, probably is going to be a guard, like you said, maybe play some center. And also is 24 and also kind of developed and ready to play right now. For Green Bay to get that type of player where their offensive line is right now and sort of the needs that they have from a depth standpoint, I actually think it's almost more of a positive than a negative for him, that I think he can come in and play and have that versatility and be a depth piece for the Packers. I think he is a name to really keep an eye on around round three for the Packers. But you mentioned a ton of them. I think a lot of those guys you just mentioned could make sense at a variety of different positions. But Hall and Puni for me, two guys at very top of my list in that range.
Yeah, I find the age conversation to be really interesting. I think the skill players and maybe the cornerstone players, the tackle, the corner, the edge rusher, you're kind of projecting that second contract. And, you know, I think the age factors in a lot more. Offensive line and guard, center, D tackle, edge, the age is all about how much you need in that readiness. So a guy could be 24, 25, and you think that's a ding on his draft stock until he has to go up against 30-year-olds next week. You know, and suddenly that, you know, grown man strength and the experience and the age help you. Now, does it maybe put the time clock on your NFL career? Certainly. But we're just trying to make it first. So I think, you know, sometimes being a little bit older and having your body a little bit more mature certainly helps, especially if you need a guy to come in and play right away. Now, if there's a 20-year-old like Kenny Clark coming out, you know, and you can, you know, maybe, you know, see the projection down the road and you're going to take, you know, a gamble on a really high level young player. Certainly there's cases for that too, but I think the age conversation has more pros and cons than people think.
Totally agreed with you. I want to talk specifically, I know we just sort of talked about trying to figure out needs when, you know, you don't always know what they're going to be, but there do seem to be two relatively glaring needs on this defense right now, safety and linebacker. You've got Xavier McKinney as your starter, Anthony Johnson Jr. You've got, you know, Benny Sapp the third. There's a couple guys on the roster, but for the most part, it's McKinney and question marks. At linebacker, you do have Isaiah McDuffie. You have Quay Walker. And then once again, you get into some pretty big question marks after that, a Christian Welch. You've got an Eric Wilson, who's a veteran journeyman special teams guy, but probably could use some upgrades at both of those positions. We've talked about a couple of the guys already, Colson, a little bit about Edrian Cooper, safety Jaden Hicks. But are there a couple of players in this draft, maybe at different levels of this draft, that you think could come in and fit with this Jeff Hafley defense?
Yeah, and I think he's going to ask a little bit more man coverage out of some of these players. So having some guys that can, you know, hang with some slot receivers, some flex tight ends, a little bit more athleticism than maybe the size and the strength, I think is going to be a need for this team. So Jaden Hicks, I think, is a premier player who can cover and has the size. I think that's why a lot of people view him as their top safety. Like people like Dane Brugler has him as his top safety. Yep. Guy can play down the field and stop the run downhill. I really like this Dadrian Taylor Demerson kid from Texas Tech, who I think really has a cornerback style, you know, background to his safety play. I think he has 10 interceptions in his career, a little bit undersized, explosive player, has some kind of, you know, maybe some flashes of like an Eddie Jackson coming out of Alabama, who has some great coverage skills. Tyke Smith out of Georgia and his teammate Javon Bullard out of Georgia, two guys that played a lot of man coverage and can play on the back end and some safety. So I think there's some really interesting undersized safeties that maybe don't have that over 200 pound profile, but run 4.4 and a really exciting man coverage guys. I think this Packers team is going to play a lot more cover one on third downs and need some of these safeties to come down and match up against players.
Yeah, Dadrian Taylor Demerson was a player that I just watched a bunch of yesterday. And it's like you see a lot of mistakes from him coming off of the back end and maybe some little bit of over aggressiveness. And like every time I was like, I almost wanted to immediately forgive him. I'm like, ah, that's okay. Just because you love watching his aggressiveness and you love watching the way that he plays, the coverage is good. You mentioned the playmaking ability. He's one of those players that usually I would watch and I'd be like, I'd be making all the reasons of why not to. And I just wanted to keep making of reasons of like why to, because some of the stuff is so freaking fun with him.
Yeah, he's a really interesting player. I just wrote better coverage player than tackler, bit of a drag down guy, but he plays 100 miles an hour, a bunch of flyby misses, but he takes good angles, fluid athlete, trusts himself with good ball skills, experienced player, over 500 special team snaps in his career, former high school running back. So you just have that kind of different makeup in your brain. Being a running back, you got to be tough. You have to be a little bit off mentally to be a running back, in my opinion. So you have to be able to just take on defenders. So I like seeing a running back profile from defensive backs in high school. So I think he's a really interesting player and probably going to get drafted a little bit higher than people think.
Yeah, I think so too. One thing I meant to mention earlier, you brought up Michael Holm. We were talking about him earlier. He was one of the players that Green Bay had in for a top 30 visit. So it's not always necessarily a huge indicator, but guys that they've had in that have turned into Packers over the past couple seasons, Dontavian Wicks, Lou Nichols, Ben Sims, Kadeem Telford, Cameron McDonald, Carl Brooks, Tariq Carpenter, Samori Toure, Devontae Wyatt, Christian Watson, Rasheed Walker, Romeo Doubs, Benji Franklin, and Gene DeLance all became Packers at some point in time. Those were just top 30 visits over the past couple seasons. So Michael Hall definitely could be a player to keep an eye on. I meant to mention that earlier. All right. Moving on. I wanted to ask you a couple other things here before we get out of here. Let me just ask you this. Let me have you put your Brian Gutekunst hat on for a moment. Goody has 11 draft picks. He's got five in the top 100, number 25 overall. Knowing sort of where Green Bay stands right now as a roster, knowing some of their needs, knowing the strengths and weaknesses of this draft, how would you like to see Goody attack this draft, knowing what draft capital he has?
You know, it's really tough to say. You know, I want them to add offensive line talent, high level. If there's a guy that they really like, I think they have exciting capital to be aggressive, to go get a guy. I think they have some interesting roster construction at the moment for them to fall back to. So I think that's a little bit of a balking answer there, but I think this team is really going to be a mover and shaker on draft day. I don't expect them to pick at 25. I think they're going to move around a couple times, be candidates for other teams to come up and get their guy while also kind of adding some day two depth and some day three depth as well. So I don't really know, to be honest with you, Andy. I think this team, based off of 2023, is playing with some house money and accelerating the timeline of some of these young players. There aren't that many needs on this team, and I think their draft capital and where their kind of team projection is, this team should be sellers right now and kind of have their hand up to say, come talk with us, come dance with us, and you know, we have a lot of capital to kind of move around. So I can make a case for them packaging some of those day two picks and moving up into the teens or maybe even, you know, into the top 10. I can make a case for them to get out of 25 and let somebody come up and take a Bo Nix there, late in round one, or maybe a tackle that another team really wanted or a receiver a team really wanted sitting there late round one. I think you're going to find some of those, you know, Ravens coming up and saying, oh, Lamar's there. We want him. We're going to come get him type of guys. And I think the draft's going to have that because of the thrusting up of quarterbacks, the thrusting up of some tackles. You're going to sit there in the end of round one and maybe the Bills want to come get a Brian Thomas Jr. that's sitting on the board there type of thing. So I think other teams have much more glaring needs, in my opinion, that make the Packers really exciting to kind of be some movers and some shakers and to be a dance partner with some other teams.
Goody's talked on a few different occasions already about the ability to move up and down the draft board. And you can just tell with all the capital he has, he's going to be very active trying to make deals that make sense for Green Bay, whether that is moving up or moving down. Wouldn't surprise me if he moved down in the first round and then use some of those more capital to move up in the third to get more second round picks. Like, I think he's going to be super active. The other thing too, 25, as I've talked about a couple times here, has been a hotbed for trade activity. It has been traded in 7 consecutive drafts and it has been traded 15 times in the last 19 years. Wow. So pick 25 has been a very active spot in the draft. And I think a lot of the reasons you just mentioned, whether it's you want to get that quarterback and get the fifth year option, whether it's one of those wide receivers or tackles or a big time player falls to 25, just makes sense. And you've got some teams that, again, are pretty good that might be willing to trade back and sort of round out their roster. You look at Green Bay's, again, sort of quote unquote needs that we talked about, linebacker, safety, running back, like some of those aren't going to go pick 25. They're probably going to go closer to beginning of round two. So if Green Bay does want Jaden Hicks or an Edgerrin Cooper or some of those type of players, moving down, you know, to late round one, early round two could make a little more sense rather than being more aggressive and taking them at 25.
Yeah, it's really a tough team to project. And that's a good thing, though. And I'll just go out on a limb here, Andy. I think I want it to be Graham Barton or Cooper DeJean at 25. If they sit at 25, I think the pick will be Darius Robinson.
Interesting.
I don't like that pick. I'm a little bit down on Robinson in comparison to some consensus and projections. that's just how I feel based on my 10 draft experiences of watching this team and having no idea what is going to happen with their draft selection. So I would love it to be a Graham Barton, Cooper DeJean. I have a weird feeling it's going to be a Darius Robinson. I think Gutekunst wants his heavy edges, wants his big defensive ends, has a lot of Preston Smith type qualities coming out of Mississippi State, and would be a great, you know, mentor protege program there with him and Preston. I just think it's going to be Darius Robinson. But if I was a true betting man, they will not be picking at 25.
I think that'd be my, the second one would be my bet as well, is that they don't pick at 25. It's interesting what you say about Robinson, because I like Robinson. I like Robinson at 41. Like, if they took Robinson at 41, I'd be like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. 25, that would probably be a little bit aggressive for my taste at the position as well. But Goody doesn't really care about your or my taste, unfortunately, sometimes, but he's going to pick his guys. And I guess more often than not, it's worked out pretty well for him, I guess. But that'd be a very interesting pick.
It's just not the deepest edge class. I think we're going to fly through those first three, obviously, you know, Verse and Dallas Turner and Latu really quick. Chop Robinson's kind of sliding a little bit. He's 240 pounds. He's much more of like a Hassan Reddick type. I think you're going to get right to the Marshawn Needlands and Darius Robinsons of the world really quick. And I just don't see the day two, day three type of depth. You know, I think there's some exciting guys like, you know, Austin Booker and, you know, maybe a Chris Braswell or a Deesa Isaac could come in and contribute for someone on day two. I think Darius Robinson's going to sit there on at 25 and be one of their top players on the board, not just for the Packers, but a lot of teams. And his inside outside type of versatility kind of checks both boxes with, if you want someone a little bit more disruptive on the inside, you can kind of do both of those. As we've been talking about, you know, Chris Jenkins and Michael Hall and that, you know, game wrecker, you know, three technique, Darius Robinson could check multiple boxes for you there. So I think he's absolutely going to be in play at 25 and could be that Preston Smith 2.0 for the team.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat, but with Marshawn Neyland at pick 41. If he's there, he's just somebody that checks those usual things that Green Bay likes at the position. He hits the athletic thresholds and all those things that we don't need to go into right now, but he's definitely a player too that we know Green Bay likes their edge rushers, and they're sort of in an interesting position where Enigbari is coming off the ACL, so we don't know how much he's going to play this upcoming season. I'm sure they'd like to have four guys sort of rotating. You've got LVN, Gary, Preston, and then let's say Robinson or a Neyland would be that number four. And then next year, as sort of Enigbari completely recovers from that injury, you're probably looking at Preston Smith not being on the roster next year. So you'd still have those four, either a Robinson or a Neyland, whoever they draft, again, along with Gary, LVN, and Enigbari at that point. So it kind of makes sense for where they're at. But again, I know a lot of people would probably be a little bit hesitant and maybe a little bit frustrated if they took a Neyland or a Robinson and that pick 25.
Have the Packers ever had defensive rookie of the year?
Man, I don't know. It's been a hot second.
In my 10 years, I just feel like it's always the developmental guy. The Rashawn Gary takes a year, and LVN's going to take a year. Kenny Clark was 20 years old. Quay Walker a little bit slow to start. Devontae a little bit slow to start. It's like, I remember Justin Harrell way back when, you know, taking him as an unplayed senior out of Tennessee. It's like, oh, he took a second to get going and get out pretty quick. And just like Ahmad Carroll, you know, was a bit of a disaster there. I'm just trying to think. Jair, I think, had a good rookie season.
Yep.
Obviously, Eric Stokes' career hasn't gone as planned, just being a first-round pick. Just a quick projection there. It's like, I'd love to get a high-level, immediate impact player for once, you know, in the last decade.
I thought there was one. He was close. It was Vonnie Holiday. He finished second behind Charles Woodson, of all people, for AP Defensive Rookie of the Year in 1998. So, Vonnie Holiday came probably the closest in that season. So, actually, the last time I think Green Bay took my draft crush as well was Vonnie Holiday in 1998.
At North Carolina, right?
North Carolina. So it's been, and like, because, you know, I broke down all the All 22 back in 1998. All the time to really get my Vonnie Holiday mojo going. But yeah, he was the last crush that they took. So maybe something's on the horizon where they take a guy we really like and he goes on and has an all-pro or a rookie of the year season on this defensive side of the ball. We'll see though. All right, let's talk really quick before we get you out of here. Two last questions. Any other quote-unquote Ben Fennell guys in this draft that we have not talked about yet? Last year, by the way, I went back and listened to last year's episode. Some guys, not necessarily for Ben Fennell guys, but that you talked about in that episode, Jaden Reed, you talked about as one of your guys. You also brought up Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft within that episode. I think there was one other guy that they ultimately ended up drafting that we talked about in detail as well. So floor is yours. Any other guys you want to talk about in this draft? DeMario Douglas was a guy that you were really high on in that episode as well, who obviously went to the Patriots in round six, I want to say, and obviously had a phenomenal rookie season for a sixth round pick as well. So again, floor is yours.
Yeah, the first name I have on here is actually Marshawn Nealand. So
there you go.
Great to put a bow on that, as I love his just bull in a china shop type of play profile, really long, just relentless type of guy. I don't think he's Max Crosby, but he has that style of play where he just looks like he's like an Adderall pill out there, you know, running around, just always getting to, you know, the counter moves really quick, chases the ball over the place, is a high level player. I love Malik Washington out of Virginia.
So fun.
He seems like he's this class's Zay Flowers. He's just really small. He's 5'9", 180 pounds, catches everything, exciting playmaker. He's a guy you just want on your team. I have zero clue what the league thinks of him. He could be pick 45. He could be pick 245. And I'd have the same reaction. I have no idea, but he's just a guy just really easy to like. I like Dwayne Carter out of Duke. Played some defensive end, played some three tech, watched his one-on-ones at the Senior Bowl. I mean, he dumped two or three offensive linemen. He's got really good leverage power, chases the ball over the place. He's an exciting player, experienced, good kid as well. I really like Luke McCaffrey as well. He just feels like a Packer type of pick, whether it's that Jordy, Janis, Bill Schrader, gritty white guy receiver. Give me Luke McCaffrey in the locker room. I don't know if he's going to just play special teams for the first year or two. Catches everything, tough kid, athletic, quarterback background. I really like him. And a couple corners out there, Andy, I just cannot quit outside of their size. You know, the Max Melton, the Jarvis Brownlees of the world, Renardo Green out of Florida State. Man, these are guys you want in your defensive back room. I have no idea where you have to pull the trigger in the draft. These are just guys I really like. To the point, you're almost saying that early round two pick, you might have to go, you know, get one of these guys there, because just I just don't think there's that much cornerbacks between them and Arnold and Quinion and, you know, Mike Sanders still. So I think some of these guys are going to go in round two. I just wish they were a little bit bigger, but they are feisty, good man coverage, high level players, good ball skills. I really like Malik Mustafa out of Wake Forest, an exciting, explosive safety. Another guy like the Texas Tech kid, plays 100 miles an hour. He's got some flybys and a little bit reckless at times, but man, he gets from A to B quick and with a tough attitude and physical presence. I like those safeties. So Malik Mustafa, some of those smaller corners, Marshawn Nealand, Dwayne Carter, Malik Washington, all those Fennel crushes. We'll not be seeing them in green and gold, I'm sure. So best of luck wherever they land.
Nealand, I think, is actually a decent chance. I think Max Melton has an opportunity as well. Obviously, his brother Bo in Green Bay. I definitely could see a couple of those guys, but you never quite know. Washington was so fun. I spent some time on him yesterday as well. Saw a little Brandon Cooks, like you said, Zay Flowers. Yep. Also saw like almost like a smaller, quicker Randall Cobb. Just so, it's because like what was so amazing about him is with how small he is, you don't expect him to run through contact as well, but he's got a really low center of gravity and really breaks tackles that you would not expect him to break, which is a little Randall Cobb-like. So there's a lot to like about him. Of course, when you get to like some of those like slot wide receivers, they become a little bit more of like how much do you want to value, and but like he's just a really freaking fun wide receiver.
Yeah. I'm sure you saw that touchdown against North Carolina where through the middle, he bounced off a bunch of defenders, you know, like, this guy's 5'8", 190 pounds, and you know, bouncing off guys, and you see the toughness yak in addition to the explosiveness running away from people. And it's just like, well, it's all manufactured touches. He's mossing guys too. He's going up and competitive with the ball. Great week at the Shrine. He's just not that big. So I wrote down Zay Flowers, Sonoris Moss, Jeremy Curley, Aldrick Robinson. These guys have survived in the NFL. It's just a matter of where you think you have to go get him in the draft to get that guy. We saw Zay Flowers round one last year. Well, his clone DeMario Douglas, as we talked about, went round six.
Yep.
And it's kind of an equal style player for the Patriots. So I think those cat and mouses of early versus late round similar players are always really fun.
You brought up the mossing ability. It was such an important trait with Jaden Reed last year as a little bit more of an undersized slot guy, where the ability to go up and make those contested catches, even at his size, that my ball mentality was so important. Obviously, Green Bay valued that a lot. They went and got him, something that you definitely see on tape with him as well. All right, very last question. I want to ask you about this because it has the ability to be a really division altering draft for the NFC North. We've talked about Green Bay, but Caleb Williams is going to go one overall to the Chicago Bears. They also have pick 9. And then you've got Minnesota. that seems to be lurking. They've got pick 11, they've got pick 23. Seems that they want to move up potentially for one of those top quarterbacks. Don't know how likely it is to happen in the top three anymore, but JJ McCarthy seems to be somebody that they could theoretically move up for. Either way, there could be two brand new quarterbacks in the division. Your thoughts on Caleb Williams to the Bears and what the Vikings might do at quarterback and how that could change the division?
I welcome it all. I welcome for all the bottom dwellers in this league to step your game up and come show up and let's you know, meet in the backyard type of thing. So yeah. I want the Bears to be a quality football team. I'm so excited for this new era of the Lions to be a quality franchise. I'm excited for the Vikings to move on and go get Drake May or JJ McCarthy and, you know, get up to this next era after Kirk Cousins and all the money you spent there. I want these teams around the Packers to be quality. And then you beat those teams.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to live in the AFC Souths of the world and, you know, win divisions every year at 9-8. And, you know, you have some, you know, speed bump type of teams to go through every year and it's not fun. I want the teams around the Packers in the division to be quality franchises, quality teams, and you beat them into the ground. That's what you want to do in the NFL. There's nothing going to be easy in this league to win a Super Bowl, to get through the playoffs, you know, to ultimately get that Lombardi trophy. So I don't think rooting for cakewalks is the name of the game. You want your opponents to be strong. It's going to make you stronger and better prepared to go through that journey throughout the season. And I welcome a Caleb Williams to the Bears. Could be the best quarterback in franchise history. And I welcome this new era, the Vikings. And hopefully it's somebody that Justin Jefferson gets along with and they can lock him in, you know, long term as well. So I think the Bears are really exciting with those two top 10 picks, whether they go QB tackle, QB receiver. So I welcome it and, you know, we'll see him on Sundays.
Yeah. It's going to be really fun. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen anymore, but if Drake May would go to Minnesota, if you get, you know, potentially those two quarterbacks in the division and Drake May and Caleb Williams, and you already got Jordan Love and a really good Lions team, that could be a very fun must watch division very, very quickly. Even if it's McCarthy, it becomes that way. So, should be a lot of fun to watch. Ben, you are absolutely amazing. Love this episode every single year that we do it. We of course will catch up right after the draft as well to go over and start unwrapping some of those presents, as you mentioned earlier, but tell everyone where they can, find all your amazing work and what you're going to be doing draft weekend.
Well, certainly at @BenFennell_NFL. Catch some draft coverage here for a couple more days before I convert into a gardener and a golfer for the next few months. But I'll be heading out to Detroit here in a day or two. I'll be on the set with Daniel Jeremiah, Rich Eisen, Charles Davis, Joel Klatt, Pete Traeger, helping those guys out with research. Did a lot of the video prep already as far as breaking down these players when they do get picked. It's a lot of preparing, and then you kind of let everything roll downhill once you get out there and these players get selected. So I'm excited to be out there. Fingers crossed for the Midwest in late April, as could be very weather dependent. Yep. Got through KC last year, got Detroit this year. Obviously, we know Green Bay next year. Quite the Midwest gauntlet of drafts. It's going to be so weather dependent. So I'm hoping we get some sunshine out there in the town square. So I'm really excited to be out there. And before camp time, and then the regular season is going to be here. We're going to be recapping and breaking down that Brazil film before you know it. So I think the summertime is certainly a good time to be alive, and the draft kind of kicks it all off.
Yeah, it really is. Ben, you're absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time. Enjoy your draft week. I know you will. We'll catch up right after. Again, make sure to follow him at @BenFennell_NFL. You can follow me at @AndyHermanNFL. We will see you guys soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.